The hour 10:15 have arrived. We will call the House Tax Committee to order. We will officially call to order when we have a quorum. We're very fortunate today, and we will wait for the minutes. We don't have a Representative Schultz here, and so we can't do the minutes. And so we have today, as we do every year, which is a very good thing, we have an overview by the Department of Revenue regarding income tax returns, property tax refunds, identity theft, and auditing procedures. So with that, Commissioner Bowerly, if you could join us, please. And I believe you have Mr. Church. If you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Cynthia Bowerly. I am the Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. And with me today is Ryan Church, our Deputy Commissioner, Assistant Commissioner Steenblock for Individual Taxes, and Assistant Commissioner of Business Taxes, Jenny Starr. And we will be sharing an overview with you and covering in depth those topics that you just mentioned. And so we look forward to sharing this information with you. Happy to answer any questions, provide any additional information that you may like.
Welcome to the committee, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Deputy Commissioner Church.
This morning, we'd like to share with you information about how we serve our customers across Minnesota and how we continuously strive to improve our services and products. Fundamentally, our job at the Department of Revenue is to help Minnesotans meet their obligations under the Minnesota Tax Code. We do all of this work focused on our mission, which is working together to fund Minnesota's future. And when we say working together, we focus not only on the employees at the Department of Revenue, but all of our partners in the system, whether those are local governments, whether they're assessors, or whether they are tax-preparing professionals who serve their customers. Our vision is that everyone reports, pays, and receives the right amount, no more, no less. So we make sure not only that people have information about the tax benefits that exist in Minnesota tax laws, but also that they have the ability to file and pay as they need to. And we are guided by our values of integrity, respect, excellence, and accountability. We believe these are core to building our customers' confidence so that all of those Minnesotans who do want to file and pay, which is the vast majority of Minnesotans, have the confidence in our system that they can do so, both that they have the information and education that they need to be able to do so, and they have the confidence in our systems around the data that they're providing to us, and that they have confidence in the system that when they do the right thing under the tax code, that the department will work with those who are not following tax laws and make sure that there's fairness across the system. You all, of course, are very familiar with the many different types of taxes that we administer at the department. We, of course, opened our individual income tax filing season on January 23rd, and that is, of course, the type of tax that most Minnesotans are familiar with. But we work year-round with our customers to help them understand less well-known taxes like or well-known taxes like sales and corporate and individual income, and then we also administer less well-known taxes like mineral, lawful gambling, petroleum taxes, and even less well-known taxes like the farm winery tax, the dry cleaner solvent fees, and the solid waste management fees. So we administer over 30 different tax types at the Department of Revenue, all of those that this committee is familiar with. And under those different tax types, of course, there are many, many customers across the state of Minnesota. 2.9 million individuals file income tax returns in Minnesota, and about 1.7 of those receive refunds. We have, of course, our customers also include the tax professionals that serve those individuals and entities. We do outreach specifically with military members and seniors. We have over 800,000 individuals in Minnesota file for property tax refunds. And we work with local governments to administer the state's property tax system, including the 800 licensed assessors who are licensed by the Board of Assessors, which is housed at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. And we have over 400,000 business taxpayers who are registered in our e-service system, which allows them to maintain their accounts and file and pay and request refunds. And about 160,000 of those have obligations under the sales tax statutes to file and pay. We also serve volunteer preparers who work at our VITA sites. VITA sites are volunteer income tax preparation sites that are located across Minnesota. Those are opening in the next few weeks to help individuals with their income tax and property tax refund filing. And we are publicizing those because it's important that people who qualify for that free service know about them. And if you would like more information or would like to know about the sites in your areas, we'd be happy to provide that. They serve folks of certain income levels, generally below around $50,000, seniors, people with limited English, and people with disabilities. These are IRS-certified volunteers who are qualified to file these returns for folks.
Thank you, Commissioner. We have a quorum. I'll officially call the House Tax Committee to order. Thank you, Commissioner. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I want to describe how we approach our customers. We strive to meet our customers where they are at and meet their needs with quality customer service. So while we, of course, encourage everyone to file their income taxes online and seek that direct deposit, we know that that doesn't work for everyone, and so we continue to provide paper options, and we will continue to provide paper options as long as Minnesotans are looking for them. We also know that our customers like to get information in lots of different ways. So we, of course, have a robust website, and then we also have options like social media. Some folks, millennials in particular, are very focused on social media. That is how they get their information. And so we have a Twitter feed. We have a Facebook account. And I will share with you that when I first joined the department, I thought it seemed fairly dangerous, frankly, for the department to have a Facebook account where the primary activity is to ask people to like us. But we do have a lot of likes, and we do provide a lot of great information there, including videos about tax tips, how to make sure that you don't make sort of common errors when filing your taxes, other information about different filing deadlines. For example, there's a combat zone military credit with an October deadline, so we do a lot of outreach and education that way to make sure we're reaching everyone. We also have an email subscription service. We have over 150 different subscription services, and if you'll see on your handouts and on the screen, there's a little red envelope all the way to the right side. If you click on that, you can subscribe to email services, email subscriptions that will give you dedicated information about different areas of Minnesota tax laws. So you could sign up for a sales tax subscription, for example. Tax preparers have a subscription service where we communicate with them about law changes and about things like the recent federal conformity changes. In fact, one preparer shared with us that they had just turned off their television from watching the Senate pass the federal conformity bill, and a few minutes later there was an email from us letting them know that the bill was now on its way to the governor for signature. We appreciated the committee's work in getting that done, and it was very important to communicate with folks like tax preparers so that they could help their customers with that change. We have significant tools on our website, including a Where's My Refund tool. Assistant Commissioner Steenbach will explain a little bit more about how we have modified and upgraded that tool for Minnesota customers. We publish guidance such as fact sheets and revenue notices. We have a sales tax and withholding calculator on our website. And we publish forms, instructions, and information both about tax filing requirements and about the credits and benefits that are available to individuals on our website. And we also communicate directly with our customers through letters. For example, when we make adjustments, again, Assistant Commissioner Steenbach will describe this in a little more detail, related to the 2015 conformity, we're going to communicate with a letter to each of those folks so they know what's going to be happening with their 2015 return. We also reach out to our customers directly, not just with these tools that exist online and our communication tools, but we do targeted training and outreach, for example, for the Minnesota National Guard, for pre-deployment and post-deployment to help them understand what benefits are available to them. The over 240 VITA assistance sites, with the help of an appropriation from the general fund, we help fund those sites, and we also run several of them through the department itself. In addition, tax filing vendors provide free access for their software through links on our website. Similar to the VITA site criteria, the folks of seniors with certain income limits and people with disabilities can access those software tools online for free. So again, important access for Minnesotans that we communicate with. And we also offer classes, free classes for people around a number of different topics. And we have really been focusing on that in the last few years. For example, in the last 6 years, we have been offering a sales tax class. And about 6 years ago, we were able to offer about 20 a year. And this year, we offered over 100, including an online option, a webinar, so that folks don't have to travel to certain locations around the state but can sign up online. And our first webinar sold out as quickly as, you know, any concert of any country music star that the chair might want to see.
I couldn't get a ticket.
We'll make a special accommodation for you for the next sales tax webinar, Mr. Chair. But they are very. We have done made some of these changes in response to customer requests, and we think that the results demonstrate that we are listening to our customers and doing everything we can to provide outreach and education. I'm going to next turn it over to Commissioner Church to talk about some of the security issues facing the department, especially related to the information that we have for all Minnesotans and the issues around identity fraud. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, my name is Ryan Church, and I serve as the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Revenue.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. We want to take a minute just to touch very lightly on this whole issue of securing taxpayer information. Like you, this is something that we take very seriously, and it really cuts across all of the things that we do within the department. For example, it's the reason that we work hard to make sure that our security standards and policies are kept up to date. It actually shapes the way that we hire and orient our employees and our contractors. It's a priority element of the training that we provide for our employees. It requires securing our physical space where we actually store and work with this information. We need to make sure that that sensitive data is physically secured as well. And it's an integral part of all of our internal controls and systems. And I thought I'd just take a minute to just highlight a few components of what we do and give you a couple of examples. And I'd first start with just identifying or verifying taxpayer identities. This is important for a whole bunch of reasons, and we do it in a whole lot of ways. But just as one example, we verify the identities of those customers who use our online file and pay systems, which we refer to as e-services. And that happens in much the same way it would for you if you were to create an online account at your bank. Very similar kind of process. And this is important because we have to make sure that it's only that taxpayer that has access to that information or to their accounts. The second thing I want to point out is federal taxpayer information, what we call FTI. We work with that information all the time. And simply put, FTI is any return or return information that we receive from the IRS, the Social Security Administration, or the Fiscal Service Bureau. It also includes any information that we would create or would be derived from that return information that we get from the IRS. This is not public information, so the IRS has very specific and extensive requirements as to how we handle that information, including the storage, the processing of that information, the transmittal of that information, and including the destruction of that information. And then the Office of IRS Safeguards monitors what we do. They audit our operations, and they'll monitor our work to make sure that we're in compliance with those standards. Next, I'll just touch on employee training on information security and awareness. Staff receive annual training on security awareness and procedures. This is really important because technology can do a lot. It's essential. It's critical to the security of our information. But a well-trained, highly alert set of staff can make all of the difference. Last year at this time, we were talking about a scheme where criminals were getting W-2 information. Employers around the country were being duped into providing W-2 information to criminals. And this didn't happen because of some sophisticated breach of their systems. This happened because the criminal emailed someone in payroll or HR and pretended to be the CEO or the owner of the company. The emails are very good. They look very authentic. And people actually did it. They sent the W-2 information to those criminals. And that impacted thousands of people, employees across the country. That is almost perfect information for the purpose of filing a fraudulent tax refund claim. So can't stress enough how important it is to make sure that our employees are well-trained and alert and can recognize these kinds of schemes when they come across their desk and know what to do with them. Finally, I guess I would just mention that the Department of Revenue works closely with Minnesota IT Services. And the key thing there is just to help secure our systems, which, again, involves a lot of different methods. But it wouldn't surprise you to know that we use virus kinds of software, anti-malware, to protect our systems from malicious activity that could then compromise either our systems or the data we have. It also involves monitoring our system and application logs so that we can pick up activity that might be going on in the broader environment, and that helps us protect our systems in real time as well as respond quickly to potential threats that we might see. All of this ultimately is to make sure that our customers can enjoy the benefits of an efficient information systems and at the same time have confidence that their information is secure. And we just wanted to cover that lightly before we talk more about individual income processing and some of the other fraud work that we're doing. And for that, I'm going to turn to Assistant Commissioner Steenbaugh.
Okay, before we do that, are there any questions? It would be my intention as we go through each testifier to have member questions and then bring the commissioner back at the end to kind of wrap up and then some questions for the commissioner. Deputy, any questions for Deputy Church? Representative Hertas? Or was that for Commissioner Bowerly? Okay, we'll come back to you then. Chair Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Chair, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Bowerly, what steps do you take when you hire people in terms of, do they have background checks? Do they have to have security clearances? Because they deal with some real personal data on the taxpayers.
Like I said, we'll go to Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative, yes, of course, our employees, we know that our customers expect sort of the highest standards from our employees. So they go through background checks, both criminal and tax. No one can work at the Minnesota Department of Revenue if they are not current on their taxes because, of course, that's difficult for us to hold others to account if we're not following those same standards. So those are the types of background checks that we do. And then as Deputy Commissioner Church indicated, we have extensive training around the measures that folks need to take to secure data. There are, of course, state statutes that cover things like information disclosure. We are also covered by federal regulations around that federal tax information, and the IRS requires us to report to them were there to be an incident that involved that kind of data. So there's a whole layers upon how we monitor that, how we measure that, how we track it, and make sure that our employees are meeting our own high standards.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just to follow up, and do the employees have to sign a document? Do they have to actually then develop or within your system get a security clearance to use certain information, or is it just a background check?
Commissioner Bowerly?
Mr. Chairman and Representative, we don't have what I would call sort of a security clearance like that exists at the federal level. All employees have to go through that background check in order to work in the building and get a badge to be able to access our spaces. And then depending on the type of information you access, all employees are provided with a base level of security awareness training and information disclosure training that happens every single year, not just upon hire. And our code of conduct is very clear about that. And once a year, there has to be a review of that. We lock down certain access to parts of the system. So, for example, in our IT department, certain folks are administrators, which, of course, allow them only certain access to parts of the system. So those are the types of security measures we have in place.
Thank you.
Chair
Thank you.
Any questions for Deputy Church? For Deputy Church? Chair Cross.
Mr. Chairman, not so much on the security, but... Mr. Church, you commented several times about the training and the updating, and I'm sure other people at the table here have had the experience where constituents have contacted us, and they have contacted revenue and not necessarily got the correct information. And quite honestly, when I was, and this was a number of years ago, but I had constituents more recently. I was the executor of my mother's estate, called the IRS, and I got two different answers on how to handle a particular issue. Called state revenue and also got two different answers because I was responsible for the estate and there were four siblings. I wanted to make sure it was right. So in the end, I went to a CPA and got what I assume, because everything seems to have been all right, the correct way to proceed. But my whole point is, how can the taxpayer be assured, if they have a question of revenue, that they're going to get the right information when they're dealing with their tax returns?
Deputy Chair?
What kind of training are we talking about when you say there's training and update?
Deputy Chair? Okay.
Yep. Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, the training is specific to each of the areas of responsibility that folks have, so we would hope that they would have that information. It's good to know that any time someone's getting inaccurate information, that we would know that. It helps us make those corrections, but the training is pretty continual in each of the tax areas, and they should have current information. In addition to that, we have information on the website. There's fact sheets and other ways to access that kind of information.
So, Mr. Chairman, so now when I called, I don't know what my constituents' experiences were, but I called and I got somebody on the other end of the line and I asked a question. Should I have asked for, I'll use that estate issue, are you an expert on estates? I just, whoever answered the phone, I asked the question and they gave me an answer, so I don't know if that was their field of expertise or not. I'm just talking about an innocent taxpayer that calls revenue that's got a basic question about something and seems to not always get the exact or most accurate information.
Deputy Chair?
I'm going to ask Assistant Commissioner Steenbach to add to this.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Carrie Steenbach, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Individual Taxes at the Department of Revenue.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. And Representative Carlson, we have quality assurance programs that we have in place where we will monitor the calls or review the work of our employees and provide feedback there. So that's one of the mechanisms we have to make sure that they're providing accurate information. We have extensive training programs for each of the divisions within the agency that employees go through when they're first hired, and then continuous training as they go about. So we do expect that they would be able to answer the question pertaining to the tax type where you're calling. But I did want to assure you that we do have some programs in place to monitor and review the work that they're doing and provide feedback.
Chair Carlson,
just as a short follow-up then, if you're checking on whether they're giving accurate information, is that based on the taxpayer then calling and saying to one of the management types, look, I called and I got two different answers to the same question? How do you determine that there should be a check as to whether the information is accurate or not? Or do we wait until the taxpayer maybe has filled out their tax return inappropriately and then gets a letter from you that something wasn't correct? I mean, at what point does that review take place? And remember, this is a real issue. I don't know if all of you have heard from constituents. I'm just using my personal experience as an example, but I suspect I did have one a while back that was ultimately resolved. It was a sales tax issue. So it's not just income tax, but at any rate, how does that work so that there is a correction? And I want to go back to the training. That's what my fundamental question is, to make sure that if I'm talking to somebody about a given tax area, that I know that that person has expertise in that area. And I don't know that somebody just picks up the phone.
Assistant Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative. So it'll occur in multiple different ways. If we're doing those quality assessments and we happen to be monitoring it or reviewing it and we see it during that review process, we will reach back out to the taxpayer to let them know that as part of our quality measurements, we've done some reviews and we've identified that they should have been given different information. So we proactively reach out if we see it on that side. We also proactively, if we get a call from somebody and that, you know, either goes to another representative or a supervisor or manager, we proactively review the case and make a determination. And if there is an adjustment that needs to be made or different information needs to be relayed, we will follow back up with that taxpayer to provide that additional information.
Sure, Carlson. Just to conclude that, you see, I chose to go to the outside using my example personally, but like I continually said, there have been others that through the years have contacted me. I simply chose to go to the outside. Mm-hmm. I got two different answers, called the fellow that normally does my taxes, and said, I'm dealing with this estate. How do I handle this issue? And that's where I went. So you wouldn't have been aware that I encountered two different pieces of information. But I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman, because I know there are other things. I just want to alert you to the fact that there's an issue out there that taxpayers periodically encounter. And I'm not faulting anybody. It just goes back to my question about training.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Deputy Chair.
I just really appreciate you raising this. And it's important because we have learned that the best thing we can do is make sure the taxpayers have the information. They know what to do. They know how to do it correctly. Most people, by far, are willing to pay their taxes on time and do it right if they just know how to do that and they have the support to do that. So I appreciate you raising that. That is a real focus of ours. And I think all of these things, the training, the quality assurance, and in fact, we didn't mention also surveys. So, for example, if you call with a question in corporate tax and you have a question about corporate tax, at the end of that, there's a survey that you can say whether or not you got a clear answer and one that was useful to you. And we monitor that on a monthly basis and are able to tell whether or not we're doing well for our customers. So I really appreciate it. It's really important to what we do.
Sure. Thank you.
Any other questions for Deputy Church before we go to Assistant Commissioner Steinbach? Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Church. The Carlson question is a very serious and important question, but what I do is I just call Mr. Cummings. I always get the right answer. Works great. And I really can do that. No, it is a very serious question that, and I think every legislator around this table gets those calls, is saying, well, he told me this on this day and this on this day. And so we want to make sure people get the right answer.
I'll remember your advice about Mr. Cummings, Mr. Chairman.
I give him a call. He's very good. Okay. Assistant Commissioner Steinbach, please state, well, you've already, you're on the record, but if you could give us your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair members. And today I'm going to talk a little bit about the work that's being done around our individual income tax, which includes both individual income and property tax. So I'm first going to talk a little bit about the return processing that happens within the agency. In recent years, we have seen an increase in the number of taxpayers that we serve. As Commissioner Bowerly said, each year we serve about 2.9 million individual income tax filers, and about 1.7 million of those will receive a refund, and others will make a payment. In addition, over 800,000 Minnesota taxpayers file a homeowner's and a renter's property tax refund. So this is more individual filers than we've ever had. To give you a sense of the increased demand, we processed almost 500,000 more individual income tax returns in 2016 than we did in 2007. And last year, we processed over 150,000 more property tax returns than we did a decade ago. With this growing customer demand, we continually evaluate how we serve more and more of our customers. And unfortunately, as more and more identities are stolen, other fraud schemes emerge, or simple fact errors are made on filed returns, the department needs to take steps to make sure we're protecting taxpayers, their refunds, and the state's general fund. And as we see an increase in stolen identities, there's also an increase in criminals who will try to use these identities to file returns hoping to steal a taxpayer's refund. In fact, some of you may have been a victim or have friends or family members that have been a victim of stolen identity. And just as identity thieves are now using that stolen information not only to open credit cards, or conduct other financial transactions, they're also using this information to file fraudulent tax returns. And these returns pose two risks. First, the legitimate taxpayer whose information was stolen. Filing a tax return is often the first time these people become aware that their identity has been stolen. And we need to make sure that these individuals get the refunds that they are entitled to. However, it can take a little bit longer once we identify that identity theft has occurred. The second risk is to the state's general fund. As we pay out refunds, if we pay those out to criminals, criminals then see the state of Minnesota as a target, resulting in additional losses to the general fund. We have to constantly monitor the environment around us and anticipate how things in the environment can be negatively impacted, both the taxpayers and the state. For example, as Deputy Commissioner Church described, last year some Minnesota businesses fell victim to a spoofing scam where employees of Minnesota companies were tricked into sending the W-2 information to cyber criminals. In this situation, an individual's most private and important information became a very useful set of information for criminals to use to file fraudulent tax returns that look very similar to a legitimate tax return because they're using that same information that they've stolen. When we read about breaches in the private industry, we have to pay close attention to those situations. We have to analyze what happened, how it happened, what type of data was taken, and then we have to determine how it may be used here and what we can do to make sure we're protecting the integrity of the tax system and our taxpayers. As the commissioner stated, our vision is that everyone reports, pays, and receives the right amount, no more, no less. Our vision is in the forefront as we're processing returns. So within the agency, we use a combination of skilled staff and technology, including analytics, to make sure we do our part to protect the taxpayers and keep the refunds safe. This work oftentimes requires changes be made to returns as part of the return processing and before issuing a refund. So, for example, in tax year 2015, we made changes to 113,000 returns, and those changes totaled $64 million. While the vast majority of our reviews and those changes result in a prevention of an incorrect or a fraudulent return, there are times when we review a return and we discover the taxpayer is entitled to more of a refund or a reduction in the amount of taxes owed, and when that happens, we make those adjustments to the return as well. So taking the time that's necessary to review the returns and make the changes on the front end helps us protect the taxpayers and the revenue of the states. Our dedication to reviewing the returns and taking the time we need allows us to take steps necessary regardless of where the fraud may be occurring, and allows us to take that time we need. So whereas the IRS or other states may be adjusting their refund timing and when they're going to issue the refunds, because we're dedicated to doing that up front and taking the time we need, we don't have to continuously change our messaging as to when refunds may be released. In this environment, there's no longer any such thing as a simple return. Protecting taxpayers and the revenue of the state means that some returns may take longer to process than in prior years. We know that this is an inconvenience to our customers, and we are working very hard to make sure that we do our part to protect the state. We have implemented a new Where's My Refund application, and prior to implementing this application, we hired a consultant that helped conduct focus groups with our customers to learn more about what they wanted and needed to understand where their refund was. Our new solution walks the taxpayer through the steps that it takes to process a return and lets them know the exact date that we've issued their refund. Last year, more than 560,000 customers used this application to check the status of their refund. I also want to talk about tax preparer oversight that we do within the agency. We have a role in ensuring that tax preparers who are trusted to represent our taxpayers are doing the job for their clients. And while the vast majority of tax preparers provide quality service and meet ethical standards, to help customers find a good preparer, we educate taxpayers on questions to ask preparers so that they can be informed when making a decision to select a preparer. But unfortunately, because there are some preparers who abuse the trust of their clients, we are working diligently on this effort as well, including a proposal you will see shortly in our policy bill to provide more protection to customers. When preparers commit fraud, the department takes action against them in collaboration with local prosecutors. For example, we had a preparer, Rona Griffin, She was a tax preparer in Minneapolis. And in 2015, the Hennepin County Attorney's Office charged Griffin with 53 felonies based on an investigation that was conducted by the department. Griffin owned a tax preparation and bookkeeping business, and she filed hundreds of tax returns for clients using fraudulent information. Without her clients' knowledge, she would deduct large charitable contributions her clients never made. She would forge donation receipts, change her clients' occupations on their returns, and claim fraudulent business expenses for her clients. And unfortunately, the vast majority of her clients did not know she was doing this. As a result, some of her clients received larger refunds than they were entitled to, while others received refunds when they owed taxes. In addition, Griffin repeatedly failed to file and pay her own income and corporate tax, and she was sentenced to 46 months in prison and is now serving that time. She was also required to pay $125,000 in restitution to the state of Minnesota. Taxpayers entrust preparers with personal information and their money, and they deserve fair representation, not fraud. And we work to make sure that everyone, including the tax preparers, follow the tax laws. So these are just a few of the ways that we focus our audit and criminal investigation and processing resources on bringing those furthest from compliance into compliance. And we're not only ensuring these taxpayers meet their obligations under the law, but we are leveling the playing field for all taxpayers. We also know that criminals are not just interested in individual income tax returns. They also target businesses for their information so that they can file refund claims with that information as well. So as you know, there are constant threats to our cyber environment and data, and we read about them in the news nearly every day. We take very seriously our responsibility to protect our customers' data and the general fund by preventing fraudulent refunds from getting into the hands of these criminals. So finally, before I transition to Assistant Commissioner Starr, I would like to provide you with a quick update on the status of federal conformity. And first and foremost, I want to thank you for your work to quickly pass the federal conformity bill. Because of your quick actions, customers filing a tax return for this filing season are able to file accurately the first time, receiving the tax benefits that they're entitled to. So there are over 38,000 preparers and individuals who sign up to get email notifications on individual taxes. We were quickly able to provide these individuals with directions for tax year 2015 and 2016. And in addition, we held a webinar last week to walk through the changes where more than 600 preparers attended. So this week, we are going to be making the adjustments to the 2015 returns that were impacted by the mortgage indebtedness, and those taxpayers will receive a letter from us notifying them once that adjustment is complete. Later this summer, we will adjust the 2015 returns that were affected by federal conformity laws, and we are asking taxpayers not to file an amended return. We will make those adjustments for the taxpayer and notify them of the adjustments that we've been made. So with that, I'd like to thank you again for your time today, and I'll transition it over to Assistant Commissioner Jenny Starr.
Before we do that, we've got some questions for you, Assistant Commissioner Steenbuck. Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have two different topics to ask you about. On the $113,000 that you mentioned, is that just limited to 2016, or does that include other years? And as well as that, how many were just changes that you guys needed to do in the calculation of what the refund would be versus actual fraud? I clearly identified fraud refunds.
Assistant Commissioner Steenblatt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, the 113 returns were tax year 2015 returns that were adjusted. The $64 million in adjustments is a combination of fraud, and one of the things that's very difficult is in some cases it's hard to tell whether it was a calculation error or it was fraud, because we can't, when we call something as fraudulent, we can clearly identify intent. And sometimes it's a little bit more difficult to identify intent. So the $64 million is the bulk of reductions that were made. based on what we clearly identified as fraud and other adjustments that needed to be made that may or may not have been fraud.
Chair Anderson?
Mr. Chair, the other question that I had is I received an email this morning from a fellow that was upset because prior to this year, apparently, vendors would print out the form and give that to individuals, and it's the form that they need to send in their check to the state of Minnesota. And he says now he has to print out that form and wants to know why the change in policy, why aren't the vendors still providing that, and why did they have? Why does he have to go and print out that form?
Assistant Commissioner Steenbach?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I believe you're talking about the voucher that somebody sends in with their payment if they make a paper payment.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we asked the software vendors to do, we did not make it mandatory for them to do, but we did ask them to direct people to the voucher system that we have available on our website, because what we found was that the vouchers that the software vendors were creating were outside of the specs and were causing issues, which meant that the payments would not get appropriately applied to the taxpayer's account timely. So by directing the taxpayer to our website to print the voucher there, the voucher is accurate. It contains the information that the taxpayer implemented, and it allows us to accurately and timely process their return. When we implemented that voucher system, that was another one that we did focus groups with and did usability testing to make sure that that voucher system was less complex than what some of the vendors had in place. And we implemented feedback based on our taxpayers before rolling that out.
Chair Anderson?
Mr. Chair, are the vendors opposed to just using your form and providing that to their customers, or was that not part of the conversation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, they have to program it. So what we ask them to do, and that's where the issue lies, the programming that we give them, they're not accurately programming it. So what we ask them to do was to provide a link to our voucher system that the taxpayer clicks on, and then they can enter it.
Chair Anderson. Chair Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much, Assistant Commissioner. I just had a couple of questions when you went through some of your figures on, particularly on property tax and venture credit refunds. You mentioned that there's 150,000 more this decade than previous, and about 800,000, I think, returns or refunds on this. I have gotten more calls this year about delays in processing of property tax refunds than I've ever received. And both from homeowners and tax preparers. And I just wondered if in trying to crack down on fraud and that, if you could delineate for us what the incidences of fraud in filing for property tax refunds versus income tax and what the process is, because my assumption is that then the department does some kind of a check on records with the county on who owns the property, and that those things match up if you're trying to ascertain that it is the right person filing for the refund in that. But could you shed a little more light on that topic for us?
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, as far as the process that we go through to review the returns, both the individual and the property tax returns, there's several different things that we look at. The county records may be one piece, but there are other elements that we look at. And we don't typically share those publicly because with the ever-growing fraud schemes that are out there and the fraudsters, we don't want to share our review and audit processes and have them turn around and use that information to file fraudulent returns. As far as the numbers go, I'd have to get you that information.
Chair Loon.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And I would appreciate it if you send some information forward. Or I don't know if you have any ballpark figures on what percentage of returns or applications for refunds for property taxes filed are indeed fraudulent, and if that number is growing, if you could respond to that. And then secondly, I was wondering, in the increased number of applications for refunds, the 150,000 more than a decade ago, are those both homeowner and renter's credit, or is one of those growing more than the other?
Assistant Commissioner Steenbach.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we see growth in both areas. There's been law changes that have resulted in more taxpayers being eligible for those, and taxpayer situations change from year to year, which makes more people eligible. So we are seeing a growth in both the renters and the homeowners.
Chair Loon.
Thank you. Well, I've commented before a previous committee on this. I think we all want to make sure that the department is taking all prudent steps to crack down on fraud, and that's a good thing. But again, when people who have been in their homes for a number of years are filing for their refund as they have every year, and for some reason their refunds are taking months to process. I've had some very sad cases. One individual family, a gentleman lost his job and was waiting months and months. He was very fearful on the phone that he wasn't going to be able to provide any kind of Christmas for his kids because he was waiting on this refund. And so, you know, I'm not certain I'm hearing the rationale for why, how much fraud is out there in the property tax refund realm, and why it was taking an extended period of time to get those refunds.
Assistant Commissioner, was that a question or?
If she'd like to respond, Mr. Chair.
Assistant Commissioner Steenbach.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we do see a significant amount of identity theft-related fraud. Nationally, it's growing, and those it is related primarily to individuals, and so it is does occur nationally in the arena of taxes, whether that be property or individual income taxes at the national level. There is a significant increase, and that's one of the reasons why there is a national fraud summit that was created by the IRS that we participate in, because of the growing trend in identity theft and fraud related to criminals using the tax return as a place to obtain that money.
Chair Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunhagen.
I'll pass them in my area.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is, the Assistant Commissioner, if you think it's appropriate, Mr. Chair. I'm curious about tax collections or tax returns filed by people without legal lawful status in the state. I'm told that sometimes they pay taxes, and I don't know very much about that, so could you shed some light on that process and if we have dollar amounts of taxes collected?
Assistant Commissioner Steenbach.
Mr. Chair, Representative, are you talking about people fraudulently filing returns or what?
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if it would be fraudulent, but I'm told that there's people without lawful status in our state, and that they do pay taxes, and I'm curious kind of how they do it. And I've known of renters that are applying for, as Representative Lynn had mentioned, the property tax renters refund or property tax refund. And if they're getting those refunds. So I'm just kind of curious on the system of what kind of an open-ended testimony to.
Assistant Commissioner Steenbach.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'd have to get you more information on that. I don't have an answer to that one, but we can follow up.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you. I'd be interested in that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Assistant Commissioner Steenbach. I just want to echo Representative Loon's comments about the property tax. I had two residents in Wright County that called me. I was able to get them some help through the property tax division here, so good work in helping them. They got their checks after a long delay. They were happy because they got some interest on it, so I don't know if that's such a good thing for the state, but they were pleased because they made a little bit more than they thought they would. My question was regarding the sales and use tax. 2015, we passed a law that would allow a sales tax exemption at the point of purchase for capital improvements for businesses. And some of my vendors and those who, some constituents as well, they're confused of exactly how that savings or that sales tax exemption at the point of purchase is to be handled.
Will that get in maybe for Ms. Starr here? Could we wait till we go to Ms. Starr? I'll put you on the list for Ms.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Sure. That'd be great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Chair Detmer.
Thank you, Chair, and Assistant Commissioner Steenbach. I, too, have had calls and emails regarding the same thing that Representative Loon has alluded to. How far Do you have a backlog of the, I'm assuming, 2015 property tax returns? I'm sure you're getting geared up for 2016. Is there a backlog right now? And do you have an approximate number that we're behind?
Assistant Commissioner Steenbach.
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, we have processed 99.18% of the property tax returns at this time. And keep in mind that people are continuously filing returns, so that includes returns that may have been filed yesterday or sometime this week as well. So we have the majority of them processed for that were filed this year.
Chair Detmer.
Thank you.
Okay, we will go to
Chair Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Assistant Commissioner, when am I getting my income tax refund? No, I'm just kidding. I just wanted to kind of actually take your side on this issue. There's a lot of internet fraud and identity theft occurring right now, and I understand that the precautions. Drew, can you move? Thanks. There's a lot of there's a time-consuming process to put in these fail-safe mechanisms to make sure they get stopped, and I understand that's a it's an inconvenience to the taxpayer, especially when they're accustomed to getting the refunds quicker. But this is an international crime syndicate that has been targeting states, particularly Minnesota and most states that have generous expansions of their earned income tax credit. So I'm sure you guys are doing everything you can to speed up those refunds, but at the same time frame, if you can just keep being vigilant and fighting against that fraud, it's actually something I think is worth it. So thanks. And I'd like my refund, yes.
Thank you.
Chair Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question goes back to Representative Anderson's on the voucher. If the voucher is accessed from your website, is there a code on it that ensures that the payment will be credited to my account, for example, rather than the voucher that I receive from my CPA?
Assistant Commissioner Steenbach.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, yes. When the taxpayer goes out to input the information on our voucher, there is a scan line at the bottom of that, and the information that the taxpayer inputs translates into that scan line, and that's what makes sure it gets appropriately applied to the right taxpayer's account.
Chair Erickson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So the fact that our Social Security numbers are listed on that voucher is not an assurance that our credit is provided for us?
Assistant Commissioner Steenbach.
Mr. Chair, Representative, if your tax preparer went out to the voucher site and input it themselves for you, then that would be meeting all the voucher standards. So thank you.
Chair Anderson S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is kind of along the lines of what Representative Garofalo had mentioned. You know, my concern with my question earlier, I want to know what the actual fraud is. And so I think going forward, it would be helpful for us for you to clearly identify which ones were fraud and which ones were just errors made in the actual calculation. Because I had the folks from Minute yesterday in my office, and I asked about the whole MNsure issue with the phone call. Remember back in September, October, when they were making the phone calls and they thought that there was maybe some shenanigans going on with the volume of the phone calls that were going on. And when I asked for them to quantify, you know, how many were identified then later on as being fraudulent, they didn't have any figures. And they said it was just, you know, actually it was just speculation. And so my concern is that it's easy to alarm people that there's fraud going on. And I'm not saying that there's not fraud going on. I just want to know to what degree, because I want to make sure that we have a measured approach to addressing the issue and that we don't sink a lot of money into something and then find out at the end of the day that that wasn't really the issue. Because if we're talking about errors in the actual calculations, that's not going to be addressed by any fraudulent safeguards put in place. That's just an issue of errors in calculations. So I just want to put that out there, just a comment, Mr. Chair.
Any follow-up?
No, thank you.
Any other questions for Assistant Commissioner Steenbach? Okay, we'll then go to Assistant Commissioner Starr. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am the Assistant Commissioner for Business Taxes at the Department of Revenue, Jenny Starr. It's nice to be back in front of all of you.
Glad to have you back. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Because of the breadth of our customers, both individuals and businesses, and the depth of the taxes that we administer, over 30, we need a wide variety of tools to deliver quality services to our customers. Commissioner Bowerly commented earlier on some of our education and outreach efforts, and I'm here today to talk a little bit about audit. I have to admit, I'd rather talk about education and outreach, but here I am. The vast majority of Minnesota taxpayers, of course, file their returns and pay their taxes voluntarily and on time. And they, of course, expect that others will do the same. And they expect that the department will use the tools that are available to us to bring those who are not in compliance with the laws into compliance. An audit is just one of those tools. It's something that we use to make sure that there's a level playing field for all. Without this effort, it would become unfair for one business, for example, who's following the laws and collecting and remitting the right amount of tax, for example, in sales and use tax, to compete against another business that is not. A good example is in the sales and use tax area, particularly with regard to sales suppression. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about our sales suppression focus. Sales suppression is when a business intentionally underreports the sales tax that they've collected on behalf of their customers. They can do this in one of two ways, either by utilizing some rather sophisticated software that we refer to as Zapper software, or by manipulating their own point-of-sales systems. When you or I go to a restaurant, for example, and we pay for our meal, we receive a receipt, and it shows the correct amount of sales tax that we are paying, and we expect the businesses are collecting that on our behalf and remitting it to the state. Sales tax is a trust tax, and in fact, we ask our businesses to do that in trust for their customers and the state of Minnesota. Zapper software can be used, or manipulating those point-of-sale systems can be used to create a scenario where not all businesses are remitting the correct amount. We are using new tools today to identify businesses who may be suppressing sales and working to bring them into compliance through audit. In the past year, we've completed about 40 audits that have resulted in the collection of about $1.2 million of funds that were collected from customers but were not remitted. We want to protect taxpayers who are doing the right thing, and so we use data analytics to identify those who are furthest from compliance, and to the extent possible to bring them into compliance. We also use data analytics to diversify our efforts to bring a balanced approach across our many industries and types of business. We pursue the right amount. Our audits can result in an additional payment of tax, and it can also result in no change or even sometimes a refund to our taxpayers. And in the recent years, we've also used audit as an opportunity for education. So we will take time to provide the education that our businesses might need to change their systems in ways that help them continue compliance into the future. What I really want to stress, and I want you to know, is that we've also learned a lot from listening to our business taxpayers in particular, both small and large. We do this listening formally and informally, and we lead a culture of openness at the Department of Revenue to hearing feedback and being responsive to the feedback we hear. So I'd like to highlight just a few of those efforts. You might have heard or might know that in the past few years, we've added a supervisor's name and telephone number to all of our audit confirmation letters. So these are the letters that might first go out to alert somebody that we have started an audit. We did that for a very specific purpose. We want our customers to feel comfortable in raising up their concerns to a supervisor as soon as possible. As soon as something doesn't feel right, we want people to be in touch with supervisors. The sooner that we can connect person to person, the sooner we can all get on the same page and make sure that audit moves along smoothly. We've also started audit quality assurance surveys. These started a few years ago, particularly in our sales and use tax division. It's a survey that goes out at the end of an audit, so it's happening in real time, and it's asking for real feedback on how our customers felt about our audit process. In our sales and use tax division, these surveys have been incredibly useful and helpful, and today the results are very positive. Just for an example, 95% of our customers in sales and use tax who responded to the survey said that they were treated fairly in the audit, and 89% agreed that they received appropriate and quality information from our auditors about the course of the audit and the laws that apply to their business. Our corporate audit division recently implemented a voluntary telephone survey. Deputy Church referenced this earlier. In the first 3 months of that voluntary survey, 87% of the customers we heard from gave the service they received over the phone the highest rating. They felt that their questions were answered and answered appropriately. It's important for anybody who's willing to answer these services, these kinds of surveys in real time, because it allows us to identify areas that need improvement and to respond and react as quickly as possible. Very shortly, you'll see the audit quality assurance surveys that are modeled in our sales and use tax division expanding to our special tax division as well as our corporate tax division. And finally, I also wanted to comment on audit quality review teams. I want you to know that a number of our divisions have established quality review teams to ensure that our audits meet our highest standards of professionalism and accuracy. These teams review the results of those surveys. They also review a sampling of audits. They're looking for areas in which we can improve, and they're developing in real time education and training that they can push out to our audit teams. Our divisions also meet regularly with our administrative appeals officers. We know that in administrative appeals, our folks get a really close look at how an audit proceeded, and if they have feedback for our divisions on how to continuously improve, we want to hear that. So in acknowledging, of course, the necessity of audit for fairness and promoting voluntary compliance, I also want to acknowledge that we know that some of you from time to time hear from your constituents on ways in which the department could do better. And we take that feedback very seriously because it informs the department about how we live up to our core values of integrity, respect, excellence, and accountability. I suspect, though I could be wrong, but I suspect that you might hear less often about our successes. And last year, in front of committee, I shared with you a story about a constituent who was chatting with me in line as we waited in the cold before Christmas to pick up our Norwegian meatball mix from Ingebrigtsen's on Lake Street, and he had a very pleasant story to share. This year, I hope you'll indulge me in reading just one short letter that we received recently from one of our customers. She said, "The auditor was very knowledgeable and helped me identify some problem areas to correct for the next audit. The auditor didn't mind answering my numerous questions and was very polite and cordial from beginning to end. Like clockwork, I always knew where the audit stood and what the next steps were. Audits are usually not pleasant in nature, but this auditor was a commensurate professional from beginning to end." This is the kind of feedback that we share with our auditors as well. As we know as managers, that people often respond well to hearing the things that they're doing well, and they'll do more of it. I'm going to turn just a minute to technology before I turn it back to Commissioner Bowerly. We're always looking for ways to leverage technology to do better and even to improve the audit process. So if you haven't heard about it, I hope you will hear about our new and improved virtual audit room, which launched earlier this year. It's been receiving a lot of good praise from our business customers in particular. It's a secure online document exchange tool that's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It means that our auditors can spend less time in people's places of business during regular business hours, and then that our business customers can upload their documents at a time of their convenience. It speeds up document exchange, and it also allows the department to receive a business's records in many more of the forms and formats that they're keeping at their place of business. So there's more flexibility in that exchange of records. We're also focused on continuing to expand electronic filing options for our customers. This year, we were able to expand electronic filing to insurance companies that file insurance premium taxes. This is almost $400 million a year now can be filed and paid electronically. And we've added a free electronic property tax refund filing option on our website for homeowners. So homeowners may file their refunds electronically at their convenience with a secure and accurate data exchange system. And for those here in the room who work on property taxes, you'll know that in 2016, the department launched PRISM, the Property Record Information System. PRISM is live now and receiving data submissions. It's designed to streamline modernize our property tax records management. So prior to this project, our 87 counties across Minnesota submitted 9 different submissions throughout the year in 8 unique formats. Those formats did not necessarily interact with or talk to one another. With PRISM, annual submissions will be reduced to 4 with a single unique format. This will allow counties to easily and securely send their information to our division and let them send more detailed and accurate information than ever before. For those who don't know, we use this data to calculate aid for local governments, to track how the property tax system is working, and to analyze how proposed law changes will affect it. This will become a robust data set. It's going to open a world of opportunities to more precise modeling and data exchanges. And it's going to benefit many counties, cities, the University of Minnesota, of course, the department's property tax research staff, headed by Eric Ouellette, as well as you and your property tax experts here at the legislature. I expect Steve Hines and others will enjoy the robust data that comes from PRISM. Before I close, I know there was a question, Mr. Chair and Representative, about capital equipment. The upfront exemption, there is an exemption form for sales and use tax, and I believe the upfront exemption is something you complete on that form and provide that form to the retailer that you're working with. I will check to make sure that I'm correct on this, though. I must admit I haven't been asked a capital equipment question in a while, so I'll get back to you, and maybe I can provide the link to the form.
Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Assistant Commissioner Starr, yes, you asked earlier if there's ways to improve or ideas, just something to think about. Just personally, as I purchase my photographic equipment at the photo stores around the Twin Cities, supposed to have a sales tax exempt at the point of purchase.
Right.
And if I don't have the form on me, then I have to fill out the, you know, buy the product, pay the tax, fill out the form, have an amendment or an addendum, kind of cumbersome. But similar to that of a sales tax exemption for items that are purchased that were sales tax exempt, for example, just in my field, and it applies to many, when I purchase film or paper that I sell to the customer, I don't have to pay a sales tax on that because I collect sales tax when I sell it. I think that same system might be prudent in the sales tax exemption on the point of purchase sale rather than the cumbersome style of, you know, printing out the form and filling out if you don't have it. So I know now I have 7 items that I purchased, or 5, that now I have to go back and fill out the form and file it and try to get some money back from the vendor or the state. So just something to think about for the future, how to optimize and make it more efficient for that capital investment sales tax exemption. And then lastly, I want to do a little brown nosing to the commissioner and to the department. The Delano 4th of July committee had a little audit several years ago, and nobody wants an audit. They're nonprofit groups. But the chairman of the committee, the 4th of July committee, Alex Roser, and the committee itself said, working with the Department of Revenue, unfortunately, the audit was unfortunate, but it was a delight. They were very helpful. They were very patient. They were very understanding, and he couldn't speak highly enough for the auditors that helped them through that situation. So kudos to your department, Commissioner Bowery, and we look forward to continue to working. And then just a response, Commissioner Starr, or Assistant Commissioner, regarding my idea.
You know, to your comments about looking forward to an audit, I've also talked to some folks that look forward to a colonoscopy. So it just depends on how you look at it. Assistant Commissioner Starr.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I appreciate your idea, and I'll definitely take it back to Revenue. Any ways in which we can streamline our processes, we are interested in pursuing. It improves services for our customers, but it also improves the lives of our employees, right? So leveraging changes that make things simpler and easier are good for all of us doing this work together.
Vice Chair McDonald.
Very good, thank you. And just to add, is all I need is my state sales tax ID number to for the other program, so that perhaps that would be used in this model or a Social Security number.
Assistant Commissioner Starr.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I understand the feedback, and I'll take it back.
Okay, thank you. Okay, before I've got Representative Hertaus will be next for Assistant Commissioner Starr, but Representative Schultz moves the minutes of January 25th, 2017. Any additions or corrections? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Schultz moves the minutes of January 31st, 2017. Any additions or corrections?
Mr. Chair?
Chair.
Does the member have to be present to approve the minutes?
No, we don't have any rules here.
I could. Thank you.
Thank you.
Different from my committee.
Thank you. Yep. So Representative Schultz moves the minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Chair Erickson, and thank you, Representative Schultz. Okay, Representative Hertaus to Assistant Commissioner Starr. Or was that for Bowerly?
For Commissioner Bowerly.
Okay, is there anyone else for Assistant Commissioner Starr? Okay, I mean, we're all for you, but Chair Erickson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Because of the use of technology at the department, have you been able to reduce your staff at all?
Assistant Commissioner Starr? Or Commissioner Bowerly?
Mr. Chairman and Chair Erickson, we have invested in technology, and I think we have about 150 fewer employees today than we had just a few years ago. What technology does is allow us to put our employee resources to do different things. So I wasn't at the department 20 years ago, but I do love hearing the stories about the rooms and rooms of paper tax returns. Okay. And then even longer before that about how some of our employees, of course, would smoke near all of that paper. So we have changed a lot in the way we do business in this country and at the state. And so we do no longer need as many people to manage that paper because all of that, the vast majority of that is now online. Mm-hmm. But what we do need are folks to work to make sure that those submissions have the right data capture, so we have more people working on that, on those technology systems than that maybe dealt with the paper. So I would say that it has changed the type of employee that we need at the department.
Chair
Thank Erickson. You, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hertaus to the Commissioner before she wraps up. Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Bowerly. While I've been listening to the testimony today, I've had the musings of the nomenclature used by the department in your testimony, and to me a customer is somebody who's a principal in a transaction that is voluntary, and a taxpayer is a principal in a transaction who's voluntary because of the force of law. So I just want to clarify that. But my question to you is with regard to the individual income tax return and the withholding. It's come to my attention that with regard to the federal taxation, that a large percentage of our nation's population, after filing, at least have no federal tax liability. And I'm presuming that a similar circumstance, maybe to a lesser degree, would be true at the state level. And to that end, I'm wondering if you've looked at or studied the withholding tables or what provisions there are to permit the lowest deciles of our population, who maybe a family of four, for example, that has really no liability, to stop the withholding out of their paychecks and let them have use of that money, which is really critical to them to meet month-to-month obligations and not be as reliant upon other services and other programs. So have we talked about that? Is there a conversation about that? What can we do to really minimize the what I would view as the unnecessary withholding of their money just to wait, make them wait a year to get it back?
Mr. Bowerly?
Mr. Chairman and Representative, so we think that there's more education to do with folks around withholding. I think there is some misunderstanding with people about their choices that can be made around withholding. That, and, you know, when you start a new job, you sit down with all these forms, and there's a lot going on. And so one of the things that I think we are exploring how to do better is working with folks to understand what that withholding can look like for them, because those are choices that taxpayers can make with those forms that they file with their employer. There's a lot of the VITA sites that are out there work with people to understand what that looks like, and if they're getting a refund, to make sure that their withholding is at the right level so that they do have that money in their pocketbook regularly. And I know that the department does review the withholding tables on a regular basis, and I can follow up with you on the last time that we did that and give you more detail on the time frames in which we do that. And then I have actually heard that definition of the difference between taxpayer and customer from others, and I think one of the things that I think is really important for state government is to treat all of the people we serve as customers, because that guides how we approach our work with them, providing them with the information that they need, ensuring that, as Representative McDonald described, that people are treated, you know, regardless of what the statute says about their obligations. What I want someone to experience when they interact with the department is someone who is well-trained, someone who is professional, and treats them with kindness and respect. And so that's our model of customer service, and that's what we train our employees on. And we have very high standards. And we are all human beings, and there are days when I don't meet my own high standards of serving our customers. And so that can happen, and that's why we appreciate the feedback about where we can do better.
Representative Hertas?
Well, thank you. And, you know, just with regard to the point that Representative McDonald, Vice Chair McDonald, made with regard to the exemption, I'm aware that some companies maintain that paperwork on file if you're a regular customer. Some companies actually have issued little cards with a barcode that allow you to just show that and carry it on your keychain. So I think there are already some efficiencies in place.
Any other questions before the commissioner proceeds here? Richard Markport, Lead Markport.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair and members of this committee, we meet high standards every day. I think there's never a down day, I don't think, on this committee. Would you agree, Commissioner?
Yeah. Commissioner, for the record.
You don't have to ask.
Chairman, I mean, Markport, I would say that this committee exceeds expectations every day.
Lead Markport.
Thank you very much. First of all, Commissioner Barley, thank you so much for the presentation work you're doing. I think all the members here can see the professionalism and competence of your staff. I mean, you are, you know, doing your best to make sure that, as you're saying, taxpayers, customers are treated fairly and equally. And even some of the things that weren't mentioned today, some of the reports you do, tax incident study, botch reports, and those help us as policymakers have some data to guide those decisions on. In your closing comments, and this was my question, could you address kind of the one thing that this committee needs to know, or maybe a challenge into the future that we need to know to assure that you can continue to treat taxpayers fairly and equally? So I would just ask that in your closing comments. What is that one thing? So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Bauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we'll proceed with the conclusion of our presentation, and then, of course, we're happy to have any additional questions you might. And I think I may not be able to meet your target of one challenge. We have identified a number of them, and then if I might at the end make sure that you all have a sense of sort of what we, you know, sometimes that question is posed is what keeps you up at night. And there are many things that keep me up at night. But we do have a number of challenges facing our tax system. And we appreciate the opportunity today to share those with you because, of course, you are all stewards of our tax system as well as you consider policy changes. Growing customer demands, as we've explained, so many more refunds that are coming in the door and returns that need to be processed, and our broad customer set that we've described to you this morning. We rarely hear from customers, could you just do a little bit less for us? You know, you're just doing too much by way of education. And we know that different customer groups have very different needs. So some of our customers in Minnesota need other resources. We have particular outreach, for example, for veterans and members of the military. And then we also have complex businesses. We serve Fortune 100 companies and startups in garages across Minnesota. And so some of those complex businesses have growing needs, too, and they've shared those with us, including more formal guidance, including more revenue notices. And so that is a place that we have been hearing that feedback and have put resources and intention. And about 2 years ago, we issued, I think, two revenue notices. Last year, we issued eight, thank you, and we plan to double that number this year. We also plan to work more closely with tax professionals, the Bar Association, the CPAs, to gather their feedback and input on those revenue notices as we present them, and then, of course, we share them with the committees as well. And we know we need to continue to develop electronic filing systems, solutions for more taxpayers. And we continue to work to balance this growing customer demands with the resources that we have available to meet those needs. Refund fraud, as we've discussed today, is another area of growing challenge, and I think the committee discussion here today is exactly that balance that we are trying to find about protecting our general fund from this growing threat from criminals and making sure that innocent taxpayers are not unduly caught up in that processing time frame. And we appreciate the legislature's additional resources last year. We have those on the ground for this filing season for income tax and for property tax, and we hope that that Minnesotans will see a difference in the processing time frames that they've experienced in the last 2 years. But that is an area that is constantly evolving. Just this morning, there was a story out of Indianapolis where an employer had turned over the W-2 forms to a criminal, and now they are, you know, working with their employees. I think it was about 40,000 employees, letting them know that they had. And, of course, that happened in Indiana, but that's great information that sometimes what we see are sort of phishing expeditions. We see somebody testing against our system with data from somewhere else and seeing if they can get through our system, setting up a history of a transaction, and then they can come back in. And so, you know, it's really happening, sort of literally every day. And so we appreciate the committee's interest. We share the concern of our customers about the time frame that it takes, and we're working overtime. We have put additional resources there. Our employees are working incredibly hard to try to make sure that everybody gets their refunds in a timely way while we protect the state's general fund. And then we are also facing challenges around our changing economy, and particularly in the way that digital products or additional technology changes has changed the way that products exist and the services that are delivered, with tax laws that may have been written before any of those things were even thought of by creative people. So we have often bring those to you. So, for example, a couple of years ago, sales tax laws on the purchase of books, for example, have been around, and they were written, however, before e-books had been invented. So Minnesota recently updated that law. So no matter if you purchase the physical book in a bookstore or whether you download one on a device, the taxes are the same. And, of course, we're having a conversation with all of you about what digital products and what that means, and we look forward to continuing that conversation as the session progresses. And, again, that's just not something that may have been contemplated at the time that laws were originally written. And so a level playing field also means that making sure that the decision about whether something is taxable or not isn't solely dependent upon its form or format. Those are some of the hardest questions for us when our customers call us or approach us with questions, is trying to work this new service or new product into a law that just simply didn't contemplate its existence. And so we work to provide as much guidance as we can within the statute as it exists. And then, of course, we bring those to you. As we face those challenges, we work on continuous improvement. So we gather feedback. We've talked a little bit about how we do that through our surveys. We also do that with targeted outreach to particular groups. We've convened listening sessions in 2010 and 13, 15, and 16. We target our surveys. We do usability testing. We did a series of listening sessions with local property tax administrators. We did 9 sessions across the state. that were attended by over 157 assessors and 81 auditors and treasurers, totaling 84 of the 87 counties' representation. And most recently in December, we held a listening session with our business tax customers to learn more about their preferences, about how we communicate with them, the services that we deliver to them, and the ways to build our working relationships with them. And some of the changes that are coming out of that include our new approach to how we work on revenue notices to make sure that we're gathering and making sure that we have the right information as we move forward with revenue notices. We've also heard feedback about appeals processing times, and so we have dedicated resources there and dramatically cut down the appeals administrative appeals time frames. So in 2011, we had over 140 administrative appeals that were over 2 years old, and today we have 15. And so we know that's important to get people answers and work through that process with them, and so we focus on that. We strive to meet our customers' needs through efficient and effective tax administration and providing that quality customer service with a commitment to continuous improvement. Our job is to help customers understand their obligations under Minnesota's tax code and have the resources that they need to be able to meet those obligations. I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Chair, and to Lee Marquardt's question. I think the biggest challenge really facing us is, I would put fraud in that category. We have seen it in identity theft-based fraud in our individual income tax and property tax refunds. We know that that it won't stay there. Anywhere that there is a refund available, they will go. And so we are hardening our business systems. We recently made some changes to our e-services systems to add two-factor authentication. Deputy Church described that. It's like when you go to your bank and it asks you, may challenge you if you log in from another device. Our financial lives are often very secure, and I think we want to make sure that our customers in our tax space understand that that level of security is necessary as well. And we know that that can cause some inconvenience, and that's that balance we're trying to reach, is how do we provide the great customer service we want to and protect all of that data at the same time. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any additional questions. Again, we greatly appreciate the committee's time and attention to understanding how the department goes about implementing and administering the tax law changes that you all consider here in committee. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And thank you very much, Commissioner. As you're always doing, committee, is there anyone from the public that would like to testify? Mr. Cummings, would you like to be a resource?
Not today.
Not on this one. Okay. Probably a good decision. Any other questions for members to wrap it up here? Representative Grunhagen and Carlson.
Oh, thank you for the testimony, Commissioner Bowerly. Does the department ever call people about their taxes? Because I've had a couple of what I consider to be fraudulent. I have a lot of senior clients in my insurance agency, and you know, one lady said she came into my office crying, and that she received a call, and they said it was from the IRS, not the state of Minnesota, and they needed her address and her Social Security number and her birth date, and she gave it to them. So, and then another constituent said he got a call with a recording from the IRS that said, you owe $2,000 in taxes to the IRS, mail it to this address, and if you don't, you will be arrested. Have you heard? Yeah. So my constituent put the phone down, raised his hands in the air, and said, is that all? No. But, so there seems to be an increased phone calling, pretending to be from tax for the state or federal, and so do you call people like that?
Commissioner Bowerly?
Mr. Chair and Representative Grunhagen, first, those kinds of scams are scams, and what we do when we learn about them is we help publicize them as such. There was, I think last year, there was a similar scam, and they were asking people to buy iTunes gift cards and mail them into the IRS. I am not aware that the IRS takes iTunes gift cards as payment for one's taxes, but it is a very, it's a very challenging and a very serious problem because, you know, these phone calls sound very threatening to people, and I think one of the things we do is educate folks that, you know, you should never give out your Social Security number and any other personal information unless you are absolutely sure about who the person is. So the way that the department does our work is we send letters to people, and then we ask them to call us. So we do sometimes call people in response to their call to us. For example, if we need to call them back and gather some information. But we never call people and demand payment over the phone or ask them to disclose personal information unless they called us and we are verifying who they are. Because we cannot disclose any individual's tax information to anyone else. So when someone calls us and says, I'm Cynthia Bowerly, we're going to ask them some questions to see if that matches the data in our system to make sure that it is not Chairman David's calling to try to find out my personal tax information. Not that he would ever.
It didn't work.
I'm glad that our system worked. If you failed, our system worked.
I thought you
were going to
do that.
So we do call people once we have notified them of some information we might need, and usually only after they called us. So they call us, and we may need to return a call to them. So I can't say that we never call people, but we certainly don't call people, demand payment, or demand personal information unless they called us, and we need to verify who they are to be able to access their file in our system.
Representative Grunhagen. Okay. We need to wrap this up. We have floor session at 12:15. We have a couple of questions here. At tomorrow's committee, we're going to hear House File. It's Patricia Dalton Day at the Capitol. House File 487, Gunther 504, Gunther 532, Anderson P, and 579, Davids. What's that? Oh, it's got to be good. Okay. Okay. And also, to wrap this up, and we will go to a couple more questions here, but Secretary of State's office is having kind of like an open house from 12 to 1, coffee and cookies, so you'll want to get over there. I call that lunch. And I guess, you know, Commissioner, I think Lee Marquardt had a great question, what keeps you up at night? And my first thought was White Castle. But, but we've had the conversations, and it's very, very serious. I think Chair Garofalo, you know, point out some things too. This fraud thing is serious, and I want to go on the record as thanking the department and you personally for realizing the severity of this and taking every action you can to combat this. And you've come into me at times and said that, you know, we've got to do these things on fraud and it could slow things down a little bit. I shouldn't just hold our conversations, but I hope that's okay. And we've had the conversations, we'd rather be right than fast. Now, when it comes to Jimmy John's, freaky fast, but when it comes to these issues, I appreciate your approach, your measured approach to make sure that if, you know, if it's a few more days for return, that's one thing, but it better be the right return. So it's better be right than fast in that case. And it's very seldom would I ever say such a thing. But I'd also like to thank this committee, the entire committee, for their work on the conformity bill, and especially Lee Marquardt, and the department for turning that around so quickly. I mean, we really had to be fast on that. We were. You're implementing it, and we appreciate that. So let's wrap it up with a couple. I've got two more folks on the list here. And, again, I thank the committee for their work on that. Chair Carlson.
Yeah. I was just going to ask in a very quick answer in the interest of time, but how this is going to be coordinated, because I think the request for funding for dealing with the fraud question goes before state government finance, and obviously this committee has a huge interest in that issue as well. And maybe we can talk about that later, but just how that is going to be coordinated. State government finance last year didn't put anywhere near what the request was, even though we spent a lot of time on it. So I guess I don't need a response, but at some point maybe you and Representative Anderson could share with us what your thoughts are on how we move forward with that request so that it is, in fact, addressed.
And that could be kind of a two-pronged approach, take our own finance. We can do in this committee what we wish to do. We'll work with Lee Marquardt and all committee members because that's a very, very important issue. And we will, that issue is not done. We've got work to do on
and
that.
And, Mr. Chairman, we'd have a problem if one committee leaves it undone and another committee is obviously interested in, you know, how we address it. And so I'm not proposing a solution, just saying that that can be a coordination problem, and I'll just stop there.
Thank you, and that's your points are very well taken. To wrap it up, President Kosnick.
Mr. Chair, I'll pass in consideration of lunch.
Okay, and the open house. Secretary Simon.
Okay.
Anything else for the good of the order? If not, good government all the time. We are adjourned.